You're listening to the First Baptist Rockdale Sunday Sermons Podcast. First Baptist Rockdale is a church dedicated to making disciples who make disciples. We hope you enjoy this week's message.
All right, we're in 1 Timothy chapter 3 today. If you have your Bibles flipped, 1 Timothy 3. 1 Timothy is a book that Paul wrote. It's one of the pastoral epistles. It's a book that Paul wrote to his protege in the ministry, Timothy. It's the first of the letters that he wrote to him that we have, hence the first Timothy section. And Paul was encouraging Timothy, who's a pastor at the church in Ephesus, to run his church in a way that is well-ordered. Run it well so that the church can be effective in sharing the gospel, can be a witness to the watching world. And so these are great instructions for us as we try to run our church in a way that is also effective and well-ordered. And so Timothy's been working through things. Last week I dealt with like the most conflict-laden part of 1 Timothy. So we aren't going to deal with that today, praise God. We're going to deal with something that is a little bit more straightforward, which is the qualifications for overseers, elders, or pastors. It is important that a church has qualified pastors or elders or overseers. That term is interchangeable in the New Testament. Sometimes the word pastor is used. Sometimes the word overseer is used, like it is here in Timothy. Sometimes the word elder is used. But it's all the same role. It's the role that I hold in this church, the pastor of the church. And it's important that a church has good pastors, because if you've looked at churches that have had bad pastors, not guys who may be, stammering like I can do from time to time, but actually unqualified men in the pastorate, you see a disaster that follows around that church, right? You can't have people take leadership of an organization to provide spiritual leadership and to provide day-to-day leadership of a church. And if they don't have the qualifications inside of them to lead that well, the church will fail. It may succeed for a while. It may grow for a while. You may see wonderful things that look like fruit for a while. But character eventually catches up to somebody. And I've seen a lot of ministers who have been thrust into positions because they have aptitude before their character is ready. And the church falters on character. It's very important to me that I'm a man that has character, so that you will look at me and be like, yes, Matt can be foolish sometimes, and Matt might be silly sometimes, but he is a man who has character. It's important to me that you look at me and know that I love the Lord and that I'm seeking to order my life under biblical principles. It's important to me that the world around us sees me that way as well, because churches that are led poorly are disasters waiting to happen. You, right now, most of you that I'm looking at today, are not now, nor will you ever be, pastors or elders in a local church. The vast majority of you will never have that position, and that's okay. You say, well, preacher, why do I need to learn 1 Timothy 3:1-7? Because one day you may be in the unenviable position of trying to find a pastor or an elder in a church. And that is a difficult job. It's so difficult that the committee that did it with me have said, we're not doing that again. And they've taken 10 years off since the last time they did that job. It's a tough job. You get resumes in, you've got to sort them out. And these qualifications that you see here in 1 Timothy 3, the qualifications that you see in the book of Titus as well, are so hard to find in a man. And also, just like in dating, people can put their best foot forward in an interview process. It's tough sometimes to ferret out the people whose character is not actually what it is, what they're presenting it to be. So I want you to hear what it is that a pastor is supposed to be. I want you to hold me accountable to that. And as you may one day be at the position of needing to add someone else into some church somewhere in a position of a pastor or an elder or an overseer, and you have that role, I want you to think that these are the qualifications that matter. We're going to read the whole passage and then we'll break it up from there. Start with me, 1 Timothy chapter 3, starting in verse 1. The saying is trustworthy. If anyone aspires to the office of overseer, he desires a noble task. Therefore, an overseer must be above reproach, the husband of one wife, sober-minded, self-controlled, respectable, hospitable, able to teach, not a drunkard, not violent, but gentle, not quarrelsome, not a lover of money. He must manage his own household well with all dignity, keeping his children submissive. For if someone does not know how to manage his own household, how will he care for God's church? He must not be a recent convert, or he may become puffed up with conceit and fall into the condemnation of the devil. Moreover, he must be well thought of by outsiders, so that he may not fall into disgrace, into a snare of the devil. So those are the qualifications that Paul gives to Timothy when looking to appoint other elders or overseers in the congregation. I think it's notable and probably worth some discussion in this sermon here about the fact that the vast majority of New Testament churches were not like our church. And I mean that in a variety of ways. But one of the key ways that they weren't like our church is typically the role of pastor or elder was shared among a variety of men. Right in the book of Titus, Paul instructs Titus to appoint elders in his church, plural, elders in his church. Maybe you've been at a church that has elders in it. Locally, like the Cowboy Church has an elder board that kind of helps to give direction to it. So if any of you've been out that way, you've seen that in a church. But typically, our small Baptist churches in small towns in Texas have a singular pastor. And I think that there's a reason to discuss that maybe that's not the best role for one person to hold. Now, what are my arguments in favor of having a plurality of elders, a variety of pastors? Well, part of that is it's good to have people that are on the same level as I am of the org chart to hold me accountable. It is difficult for the church to hold the pastor accountable. It's possible. We have mechanisms. We have a personnel committee, all right, and we have the church as a whole congregationally that can hold me accountable. But it's difficult sometimes to hold the pastor accountable. I have seen many, many churches where the pastor gets control of the church and he takes control of the church. I don't try to lead that way. I hope that that's not your impression of me as someone who's trying to be in control and run the place exactly as I want. But it's difficult when there's not other people on the same level as me. It's also difficult for me to bear the entire spiritual weight of this congregation on myself. I'm responsible for each and every one of your souls. One day, I will stand before the Lord and I will be asked to give an account for how I shepherded you as a person. And to be able to share that weight would be a blessing for me. To do that, by the way, to have a plurality of elders would create a massive change in our congregational governance. And I am not looking to do that today. But I want to put it in your mind that there could be a reason to look at that one day. To consider what that would look like, consider what having other godly men called out from among the body to stand beside me would look like, because it is the norm in the New Testament that that's the way elders and pastors are set up. Okay, so that's just for free, really not on task here. But the first point of the actual sermon is this, is that the role of elder, the role of pastor, the role of overseer, eldership, is a noble task. Eldership is a noble task. It's noble for someone to desire to be a pastor or an overseer inside of a congregation because this job is a noble job, right? It is a job that's done with the best interests of other people in mind. When I wake up on my good days and I'm doing my job as a pastor faithfully, right? I am performing a noble task. I'm seeking after your good and your good and your good. And even the person who hasn't been here in 6 months, I'm seeking after their good. It's a noble thing to desire. I do think that I've met people who have been overly consumed with the desire to be a pastor. I find that to be troubling sometimes. Like if you really, really want it so bad, maybe you need to calm yourself a little bit and seek a little more humility. Because the desire to pursue after that with no concern for other people can be damaging. But it is a noble task to be a pastor. And in fact, being a pastor, a, a, accounts you some degree of respect in the community. Like when I introduced myself, I was at a birthday party yesterday. Again, I try not to tell people what I do early on. And so I'm at a birthday party yesterday out in, I don't know, not far from Styles Ranch in the Thorndale Thrall area. And I'm out there and I'm sitting with some older people, 80 type year old people. These are great grandparents of the child that we were out doing the party for. And I'm sitting with them and they've been talking about their church and everything like that. And they said, well, what do you do? And I said, well, I'm a pastor. And they said, we need a pastor. But they were going to a small Lutheran church in Thorndale, the other Lutheran church. If you know Thorndale well enough, there's a St. John's Lutheran church kind of buried in town. They go there, we need a pastor. And I said, well, I'm not currently looking, but I appreciate that. I thought maybe they went to First Baptist Thorndale, which is also looking for a pastor. So pray for our brothers and sisters out in Thorndale. It's tough out there right now, right? But just me saying that I'm a pastor, all of a sudden they're like, oh my goodness, we like this guy now. Like, they might have been neutrally disposed to me before that, but they're like, oh, I like this guy now. Now, not everyone feels that way. Sometimes I introduce myself as a pastor, and eventually they're like, I don't like that guy at all, right? Because they have a negative view of the pastor. We probably earned that negative view somewhere along the way in that person's life. But being an elder, being a pastor is a noble task. It is a worthy occupation. And so if you feel the call to ministry, something is laid on your heart, just something in you that says, I feel the Lord is leading me to go and do this. I want you to know that is a noble task. It's worthy of pursuing. Churches need pastors. They need qualified pastors, but they need pastors. And if the Lord has been putting that on your heart, to ignore that call, right, to do anything else is not acceptable, right? You need to follow after where the Lord leads you. As we sing sometimes, wherever he leads, I'll go. Sometimes you need to go. You say, preacher, I got a really well-paying gig right now selling widgets. Awesome. Keep selling the widgets maybe and go bivocational. There's a lot of small churches in this community, in this area within, 20 miles of where we are right now that need qualified people who love the Lord, and they cannot pay you to do that. Praise God for people who can tent make along the way. But eldership is a noble task. Pastoring is a noble task. So what's the second point that we see here? The qualifications of elders demand that an elder must be above reproach. Elders must be above reproach. Pastors must be above reproach. That means that the reputation of the person should be exemplary. When I was in school, we got conduct grades in elementary school. And there was U, which was unsatisfactory. I never got any of those. There were N's, which means needs improvement. I got plenty of those. There were S's, which means satisfactory. That was the standard for me. And there was E for excellent. And I saw a few of those throughout my life. My teachers were stingy. A pastor should be someone whose character is consistently ranked in the E classification on the report card. They should have exemplary conduct, above reproach. No one can cast doubt on their character, because as soon as they begin to cast doubt on the pastor's character, everyone's like, no, I know him, and that's not him. He doesn't do that. No, not that guy. He's above that. It's not to say that pastors can't fall and do fall. It's not to say that pastors can't sin. I do sin, right? But it's that our character on the whole is exemplary. So what areas are we supposed to be above reproach? Well, we're supposed to be the husband of one wife. There's debate about what this means. Does that mean that, you know, if my wife were to die and I was to get remarried, would I be disqualified from the ministry? I think the answer is no in that area. There's some debate about divorce. If my wife was to leave me, she isn't. She's home with the sick kid today. But if my wife was to leave me, run after some sinful relationship, would I necessarily be disqualified from the ministry? I think the answer there is probably no. But if I was to abandon my wife and go marry my secretary, sorry, Carolyn. But if I was to abandon my wife and marry my secretary, I would be disqualified. I would not be a one-woman man. I would not be a husband of one wife. The actual point of this is not, have you met a legalistic criteria that you've been married once? is that, are you the sort of person that when you're out on the town, everyone knows you belong to someone else? Or are people confused when they find out that you're married because you've been overly friendly with the young ladies in your congregation? Right? People should never be confused. There's a story of Winston Churchill, and people were asking him, Churchill, if you could be anyone else in the world, you couldn't be you, you have to be someone else, who would you be? What position would you take? You're the leader of England. You're this great, eloquent speaker. If you couldn't be you, who would you be? And he's sitting next to his wife, and he grabs his wife's hand, and he says, if I could be anyone else in the world, I would be Lady Churchill's second husband. But he was committed to his wife. And there was no doubt about that he was dedicated. A pastor should be fully dedicated to his wife. None of you should have concerns that maybe I'm making eyes at you or at your wife. It should be very clear that I'm committed to Mrs. Higginbotham and that I have no interest anywhere else. We should be a one-woman man. We've all known the people who have wandering eyes, the people who say, it doesn't hurt to look so long as I don't touch. That is not the reputation a pastor should have. What else should a pastor be to show that he is above reproach? He should be sober-minded, self-controlled, and respectable. He should be someone of a level head, someone who isn't drunk, someone who isn't drunk on anything, sober-minded. They should be in control of themselves. We should be able to discipline our bodies to not do sins, to pursue after righteousness, and we should be respectable. That means that the way in which we act should garner respect. Right? There's a general sense that the pastor should be someone who is temperate in his life. He's able to limit himself. When things are going crazy around him, he's still able to remain in control of himself. I was at a football game 2 weeks ago. You would appreciate this, Hunter. And the side judge called offensive pass interference on what was pretty clearly a defensive pass interference play. And I'm sitting there with you? Nope, with Sierra. Okay, no, I can't keep my daughter straight. I'm sitting up there in the stands with my daughter and the crowd. I feel like our crowd is generally unaware of what's happening on the field sometimes. And so they're not sure what's happening. I see the pass interference sign. I'm like, yeah. I see him point the wrong direction. I'm like, no. Right? And I don't know all of the rules in high school sports anymore. I feel like you're not supposed to boo the officials. I feel like that's actually like the standard now. But I'm like, boo! And then my daughter looks at me like, Right? In that moment, like I probably wasn't temperate in that moment, okay? Like something in me wasn't ideal because like, I'm like, what? And she's like, you shouldn't be doing that. And I was like, well, you know, it's just a little boo at the guy who's doing bad at his job. And she's like, yeah, but you're the only person booing, Dad. And I was like, well, on that side where I was over there, yeah. Everyone should have been booing in their hearts, though, in that moment, okay? but it was one of those moments where I just, like, I just kind of let it out a little bit, and then my daughter's like, you shouldn't be. I was like, well, he did a bad job. And I'm like, well, you shouldn't be the only one. Like, maybe in the crowd, but you definitely shouldn't be leading the calls to boo a guy who was having a rough moment, okay? We'll give him the benefit. Maybe he's just having a rough moment. Glasses got foggy or something. I don't know. So, like, we should be temperate, though, as pastors, right? We should be in control of our emotions. And I was technically in control. I just thought he deserved to be yelled at a little bit, okay? So, whatever. Take that for what it's worth. Right, well, we should be self-controlled. We should be respectable. After that, it gets into some qualifications of how it is that we should do our ministry. We should be hospitable, and we should be able to teach. Able to teach, by the way, is the defining characteristic that defines someone who is an overseer or elder or pastor from a deacon. Deacons don't have that qualification. You don't have to be able to teach to serve the church. Some of our deacons are able to teach. Praise God for that. Some of them probably would not enjoy coming up here and delivering a message because it is not inside of their gifting to do that. But a pastor should be able to teach. I sat underneath a pastor once upon a time who I feel like failed this base level qualification. He would get up and he would talk, and I would listen as an active listener and trying to track with him on what he's saying. And then I would leave more confused than I was when I went in there. That's a problem. That's a problem. If you're not able to teach, if you're not able to communicate God's truth to the congregation, help apply it to their lives so that they can read it and understand it better, you are in the wrong job. Maybe you should be a chaplain, there may be some other position somewhere in ministry you should do, but you shouldn't be trying to pastor people if you can't teach the truth of God's word. But you should also be hospitable, right? I need to be someone who's open to everybody. That y'all shouldn't look at me and be like, that's Matt, he has four friends in the church, and he doesn't talk to anyone outside of those four people. He's got his little clique. I don't know how you break into the inner circle of the pastor, but it's very difficult to do. Right? My circle should be open to all, to visitors for the first time, to church members who have been here longer than I've been here. For those of you who may, this is your first time to come back in 6 months, I should be accessible and open to you. And it's a temptation for many pastors to circle the wagons around them with a very small group of people who support them no matter what. And those are their people in the church. And they come in near the end of the song portion of the service and they stand on the front row, or maybe they're back in the green room. And when the song ends, they come out and they deliver the word to a bunch of people that they have no personal relationship with. And then they leave. And if you want to talk to the pastor, you make an appointment with the secretary, and it may be 3 months before he has 15 minutes to give you. Right? That is not a hospitable man. That's someone who, for some reason, has built systems around them to protect them from people. And pastors don't need to be protected from people. We're supposed to protect people. Like my job, a large part of my job, is to provide spiritual guidance and protection for you as my church. And if I am only hanging out with my deacons, those are the only people I let into my little world, and I don't know anything about you, I am failing you as your pastor. I try real hard to walk around and shake hands with everybody and catch up with people during the church service because I want you to know that I care about you. And sometimes I'm real bad at it. I'll shake hands with Doc. I'll be shaking Doc's hand. I'll be looking over at Dolores. Right, and Doc's trying to tell me something, I'm looking at doors. Right? That's not hospitable. That's not the way it should be. Pastors should be accessible. If you ever find yourself in a church and the pastor is unable to be contacted, I've known people, they go to large churches, mega churches, and they've never had a word that they've ever said to their pastor. They've been there for years, and they've never said a single word to their pastor individually. Guys, I don't think that that's a biblical church at that point. And I'm not fully down on the mega church model. I think that there's good things that come from that. People find Jesus Christ, get engaged inside of stuff. But if you can't talk to your pastor, if it takes months to get into an appointment with your pastor, if your pastor doesn't know your name and really would have no idea if you're at the church at all, I think maybe the church has gotten out of line. Maybe we've jumped over into something that's not healthy. There's only so much that I can do. There's only so many people that I can pastor personally. I have a limit on what I can do. I haven't hit it yet at this church, so keep bringing people in, okay? But when I hit that limit, what needs to happen is the church probably needs to divide, and we need to plant another pastor in another congregation so that that church can grow and thrive as well. I think that's a healthier model. It's what we used to do. Now we just try to bring everyone together. Put me on TV somewhere. Yeah, you won't be in the room with me, but I'm right there on the screen. It's just like I'm there. I grew up in Houston. Second Baptist Church probably perfected the franchising McChurch model, where you got the same sort of experience in every little church around the corner. Ed Young's preaching on the screen there. Got a campus pastor who kind of knows you a little bit. I don't love it. The church, the pastor should be hospitable. It's difficult to be hospitable if you don't know your people. We should be open to all people. All right, able to teach, hospitable, that's sort of some of the qualifications there. Not be a drunkard, that seems straightforward. Not violent, but gentle. Not quarrelsome, not a lover of money. All of this goes down to the idea that this guy needs to be in control of himself, right? If you see me and I'm at, is Cliffs still open? I feel like Cliffs is for sale for some reason. But if you see me at Cliffs, and I'm looking at Brent to see, because I know like he would know. No, okay. If you see me at Cliffs and I'm 12 long necks in and sloppy, I'm probably not doing what I'm supposed to do. All right, that seems like I've lost control of myself in that moment. You don't need to worry about that for me personally. I don't drink at all. So like we'll be in good shape there. You won't. You may find me at some place that has a bar, but you won't find me bellied up to the bar. You don't need to worry about that, right? And if you do see me bellied up to a bar somewhere, you really need to worry because something went really wrong in my life and you need to come in and grab a hold of me, okay? Drag me out of there. Also, what are you doing there, honestly? But if you see me there, drag me out, okay? Because it's not who I am. Right, so we need to be in control of ourselves, fully in control of ourselves. You don't need to be violent or quarrelsome, but gentle. Some pastors are super aggressive, violent men. Right, they have a temper and it comes out of them. I think everyone has a temper. It's in us all somewhere along the way. But we need to be in control. I need to be in control of those things. You need to manage your household well. You need to manage your children well. Because if you're going to run the church, you need to be able to run the house. We need to be in control of our families in a way that makes sense. And so we seek after that. Can't be a recent convert, that makes sense, because if they are, it's easy to get led astray. Guys, all these qualifications matter for a pastor. When you're looking for a man to put into this position, it matters that they meet these qualifications. And if they fail in one of these qualifications, they are disqualified from ministry, at least for this season. If they are a drunkard, they are disqualified from ministry for at least a season until a period of sobriety can be realized. If they are unhospitable, they are disqualified. It's not, oh, you know, they're just different. They just got a few little issues. Like, I have issues to work on, but if you would categorize me as unhospitable or godly, or if you'd categorize me not as a husband of one wife, if that's how you would categorize me, I am disqualified from this position. The vast majority of people do not want to walk that path. But if you're going to put yourself in that position, you must follow those rules. Elders must be above reproach, right? And then also, kind of the final point here, is that even non-Christians should respect the elders. Even non-Christians, people outside the church, should look at the pastor of the church and be like, that guy's worthy of respect. And we've done a real bad job of that as churches recently. One of the reasons I don't tell people I'm pastor of a church, because there's a lot of people who have a lot of damage from bad pastors. And the reputation that pastors have, it used to be, if you go watch TV from the 50s, 60s, and you see a pastor or a priest on the show, he's the good guy. Now, if you see a pastor or a priest featured on a show, I promise you, he's the bad guy. Like, I don't know, maybe there's an exception on a specific show or two, but if I see a preacher walk into a show, I'm like, oh, he's beating his wife. I don't trust this guy at all. Right? We've conditioned ourselves. We're no longer above reproach in society, in Hollywood, but your individual pastor dang well better be. When I'm coaching a soccer team because the coach doesn't show up, and I'm coaching a soccer team, those parents better think that's a good guy. Like, we respect Matt as a person. They may not know everything I believe, but there's something about me that they respect. That should be your reputation as a pastor in the community. If the pastor's reputation isn't that, if you have to kind of apologize when you say your pastor's name, we got problems. We got problems. I hope you're not having to apologize for me, not too much, at least, unless I cut someone off, which happens, I'm sure. All right, what's the whole point of this sermon? It's that churches need qualified elders. Guys, we need qualified elders. And you need to do the hard work of finding those qualified people. Not everyone is qualified to be a pastor. In fact, the vast majority of people are not qualified to be pastors. So we find those people, we qualify those people, and then we allow them to serve. And you as a church, you need to allow yourself to be pastored by a qualified pastor. You need to allow me to speak into your life. And then if I'm not qualified, if there's something about me that's disqualifying me, you need to come to me. And we need to work this out, because I should not be serving as an unqualified man to pastor this church. I'm just going to bring the demise of this congregation. And that should not be.